For Parshas Beshalach, there are a number of different topics that I'd like to cover today. I don't know what time will allow us, so let me break it up into three parts. And we'll see how we organize the three parts. Number one, we want to speak about what's called Bizas Hayam. That means the possessions that the Jewish people took at Yamsu from Mitzrayim. Number two, we have the Biza, or the Klei Kesef, Klei Zahav, that the wives of the Jewish people took from the wives of the Mitzrayim, and that's already back in at the time of Yitzias Mitzrayim, and even before Yitzias Mitzrayim. And there we have the Pasuk Daber Noah, in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks Peloshen Bakosha that the Jewish people should comply with his, capital H, wishes to take the Klei Kesef and the Klei Zov out of Mitzrayim. In addition, we have another topic, and that's the Pasuk in the Shira itself. Of course, the main topic of today's parasha, of this week's parasha of Beshalach, is the Shira. Nachisa b'chazcha mzugolta nehalta b'ozlecha el nevei kodshecha, which you'll see in Perek Tesvav, Pasuk Yud Gimel. And we're going to focus on, in Mirtz Hashem, the language of this Pasuk, the grammatical use of the Lashon Avar, of the past tense, for events that are going to take place down the line in the future. Show me one, bring in a Chumash. One extra one you have?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. If you don't mind.
No, of course, yeah. I was just surprised that was in there.
Okay.
Mike was on his way here, I just see him.
So let's begin. We'll open the Chumash to Parshas Bo first, just to give a little background to what we want to discuss here about the story at the Yam Suf. And at the end of Parshas Bo, we have a famous request on the part of Moshe representing HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take the Klei Kesef and the Klei Zav from the Mitzrios, these gold vessels and the silver vessels, so that you'll find here on page, in the Blue Chumashim on page 151. And this is in Perek Yud Aleph. Daber no bi'oznei ha'am v'ishalu ish me'es re'ehu v'isha me'es re'usa Klei Kesef uKlei Zav. Now, this parsha, this episode of Klei Kesef, Klei Zav, which takes place sometime between Choshech and Makas Bechoros, should not be confused with what's called Bizas Hayom, which is in Parshas Beshalach. That's our parsha for today. And that's the riches that Bnei Yisrael took at Yam Suf itself. So there are two parashiyos. In fact, there's a fascinating response on behalf, a fascinating contrast in the response of Klal Yisrael to these two different episodes. Whereas in the first episode, in Parshas Bo, of taking the Klei Kesef, Klei Zav, what we find is that the Jewish people are very hesitant about it, very reluctant, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to say Daber Na. Rashi says Ein Na El Loshon Bakasha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to really request and almost beg Klal Yisrael to comply with his wishes. We're going to soon see that in the case of Yam Suf in Parshas Beshalach, there the Jewish people are out there, you know, just taking as much as they could, plundering the wealth of Mitzrayim. So that's one of the topics that we want to talk about today. But first, in order to put the two, at least from one perspective, which is the Vilna Gaon's perspective, to put into perspective the difference between the first exploiting of Mitzrayim and the second, we look at the Vilna Gaon, who wrote a work on the Agadata, which is called Noam Brachos, and you'll see it on number 3 in your page. And he asks the following question. When Rashi embellishes the na, the word na here, that Moshe Rabbeinu is told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to ask and request, sort of to cajole the Jewish people to comply with his wishes, Rashi says, Shelo Yomar, this is the Gemara Bracha, Shelo Yomar Oso Tzadik Avram, you remember the Brisbane of Sarah back in Parshas, Lech Lecha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised the Acharkach Yetzu Berchush Gadol, that the Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Exodus itself, would be Berchush Gadol, with the Jews having a massive amount of possessions. And now the Tzadik Avram is going to say, wait a minute, the first part of the pasuk says V'yavadum V'inu Osam, that they will be subjected to slavery and to anguish and suffering in another land. Kiyem bohem. You know, that promise God fulfilled. He was very good for his word. But then he promised, Achakach Yetzu Berchush Gadol Lo Kiyem bohem. So the tzaddik, Avraham Avinu, is going to come forward with a complaint. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu therefore says, in order to counter this complaint and put out the fire of Avraham Avinu, we have to cajole the Jewish people and convince them to take the clay kesef and the clay zav. And the Gaon is bothered by the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's emphasis here is that I promise the tzaddik, and the tzaddik is going to come forward with a claim. He says, Gam b'lo amiras hatzad. Forget about the fact that Avraham Avinu is going to come forward with a complaint. Tzarech HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'kayim avtachaso. After all, at the end of the day, the divine being made a promise, and these words were enunciated. V'acharkach, v'acharkein yetzu b'chush gadol. So God is committed to this rechush gadol. Why all the emphasis here on Avraham Avinu? And the Gaon indicates that he has other questions to raise here. I suspect, again, I can't promise you this, that one of the questions the Gaon may have had in the back of his mind is, why b'chalal did HaKadosh Baruch Hu have to cajole the people? Why wouldn't anyone want to take advantage of the opportunity given to him, you know, to get wealthy on the spot, you know, overnight, you know, kli kesef, kli zav?
They were only borrowing it.
Speak a drop line of mic.
They were only borrowing it. They weren't, they were supposedly seemingly not taking it.
So that's a machlokas mefarsh of the Rashbam, which we don't have in front of us, is of the opinion that the word she'ela means two things. It means either borrowing or taking something without returning it. Oh. But it seems clear that if this was a fulfillment of the Achakach Yetzu Berchush Gadol, that the Jewish people were meant to maintain and retain possession over these fantastically, great value zav and kesef, gold and silver. Perhaps the Gaon is bothered by a different question here, and that is, why is it the na? You know, what is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so interested in? Why is this such an important element here? But what I found in the Gaon's answer is a little bit of an opening here, at least a light, I don't know, maybe it's a dim light, to understand the difference between what we call Bizas Hayam, which is the wealth that the Jewish people would take and plunder from the Egyptians after they die in the Yam Suf, and this parsha of Klei Kesef and Klei Zav. And he says the following. He says, Vadai Hayu Asidim Lios Bozim Es Mitzrayim Eitzal Hayam. The Mechilta already tells us that the Jewish people got fantastically wealthy as a result of the Bizas Hayam at Yam Suf. And that was a much greater, inflation of their value, of their assets, than what happened here with the Klei Kesef and Klei Zav. They were okay with the fact that there would be a Bizas Hayam. They didn't have a problem with that. Rak. But here, in the earlier episode of Klei Kesef, Klei Zav, Kidei Shelo Yomar Oso Tzadik Tekef Kishayotzu Mitzrayim Lo Kiyem Behem, Chas V'Shalom Havtachoso. But wait a second, there was a promise that the Jewish people would come into possessions at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. How long of a time was it between Yitzis Mitzrayim and Yam Suf? 7 days, right? So the Achgach Yetzu Birchushko, the Gaon is learning that the word Yetzu here is Avtocha that has to be fulfilled at the moment of the Exodus, a week before they get to the Yam Suf. And as far as that Klei Kesef, Klei Zav episode, here the Jewish people were a little bit, shall we say, inhibited about this whole episode. They felt, you know what, we're going to get wealthy at the Yam Suf. There's no need to exploit the people, the Klei Kesef, Klei Zav, for Yetzias Mitzrayim. Is Lefi Zeh, he says, I can understand what the Gemara is going to say. We'll soon see this later. The Omar Bal Korchan de Yisrael, why was this against their will? Why did the Jews, why were they so resistant and reluctant to comply with the Klei Kesef, Klei Zav mandate? Because of Masoi. Anybody know what Masoi means?
Burden.
Right. In Yiddish, we'd call it a schlep. I think that became part of, at least in American English. Yeah. I don't know about British English. Yeah. But, you know, the great schlep, you know, they're about to trek through Mitzrayim, you know, from Mitzrayim all the way out there. Now, you might argue, well, you know, even at the Yam Suf, they're still going to have to schlep all the stuff. He says, Lefishi Yisrael HaYodim, they knew, Shebevada Yilehem Bizas Hayam Godol Mi'od. They knew that the possessions of the Mitzrayim they would be able to acquire at the Yam Suf, and that would be a great, vast amount of possessions. L'kach HaYu Omrim, why should we have to carry this stuff? Let them carry this stuff. L'chei HaYu Omrim, Lama Lanu L'masu Yazel HaMitzrayim Bi'atzmam Yisu Osam L'yam. Let them schlep and carry everything to the Yam Suf. V'sham Yiyu Bozes in Osam. And there, you know, after the Yam Suf, the Mitzvah are not going to be able to help them out schlepping this stuff, then we'll take it away.
I mean, this implies that they knew exactly what was going to happen at the Yam Suf. If that's the case, how come in the story they're petrified when they get to the Yam Suf? What are we going to do with them? The Mitzvah are going to overtake us, they're going to kill us. How does that fit in with that?
I guess the psychology of the human being is very complicated, meaning, at one point, Moshe Rabbeinu says, look, you can rely on Hashem, take the Klei Kesef and Klei Zav, and this is a fulfillment of the promise to the Tzaddik that the Akach Yetzu B'Chush Gadol. At that point in time, they had a great deal of faith. But at the moment that they see the Mitzrayim in hot pursuit, in front of them is the Yam, and behind them is the Mitzrayim, at that point, I guess they lost their calm, and they were no longer calm and collected. They weren't just intellectual. Now, what I'd like to do at this point is to offer a different approach, an alternative approach as to why the Jewish people were hesitant here about the Klei Kesef and the Klei Zav. So for that, I want to give you a little booklet here, and if you could open to the last page of this booklet. And this is from a sefer called Maznayim LeTorah, which is written by Rav Zalman Sarutskin. I don't know if you are familiar with the great Rosh Yeshiva of the Telz Yeshiva, if you've heard of Telz. Actually, I never was in Telz, but I was in close proximity to Telz, and I actually met a boy from Telz, a 17-year-old boy. And Rav Zalman Sarutskin writes a beautiful commentary on the Torah, which is very often quoted. And his question is, Bakasha Zulama. We don't assume that B'nai Yisrael were Masim B'Kesef V'Zav. You know, today you have some youth that are so idealistic, you know, that they hate the idea, they despise the idea of wealth. But we have no reason to believe that the Jewish people inherently found it distasteful to become wealthy. So why would they hesitate? Why were they inhibited? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu say, you know, I'm going to convince you, and I'm going to mandate that you take the Klei Kesef, Klei Zav? Number two, he says that the time of Shelo Yomer Osa Tzadik ain't a move, and he doesn't understand what that's all about. V'chi ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu rotzo l'kayim avtechaso. Ela Kadesh Yomar also Tzaddik? God doesn't want to fulfill his promise? It's only because he's worried about the tzaddik? Avraham Avinu? And he says that this question was raised before the Chachamim v'lo pirshuha. And they weren't able to understand this parsha ad shepirshu hazman hazeh. Now let me try to just elaborate a little bit on that last phrase, ad shepirshu hazman hazeh. There are two ways of looking at a pasuk in Chumash, or an episode in the Torah. One is to see it in its context, to analyze the words, questions, answers, offer interpretations. But Rav Sirotkin says that there's another way of learning the Torah, and that is to take contemporary Jewish life and see it in the Torah itself. So let me give you a little bit of background. Rav Sirotkin lived at the time of the Holocaust and shortly afterwards. And in Jewish history, in modern Jewish history, one of the great debates, and this cut across religious secular lines, I mean, it was really a divide amongst the Jewish people, was the issue of what's called reparations. Are you familiar with that? And there were many Jews, believe it or not, who were opposed to reparations, to accepting funds or monies from the Germans. Now today, it's a slightly different movement. There's a movement to reacquire stolen property, especially in art. And that's okay. No one has a problem with that. But reparations is something different. That the German government would ki'ilu write a check and give us funds to the Jewish state or different people who survived the Holocaust, as if to say, you know, we are now fulfilling our consciousness. We have a certain, you know, it's interesting, even Germany of today still has a little bit left of that, how should I say, the conscience that bothers them still. I think there's an official law in Germany even today that someone who denies the Holocaust can be taken to jail for that. Correct me if I'm wrong. I mean,
no, you're right.
I think so. Yeah. There still is a law in the books. I don't know how many people have actually been convicted of that crime in Germany. And this was a tremendous debate. You know, many Jews were opposed to accepting reparations because they felt that this could not be in any shape or form a redemption on the part of the Germans of what they did to us. Now, other Jews were saying, you know what, let's accept the reparations because at least, you know, it's coming to us. You know, the amount of monies and value and possessions of value that they took from us is almost unfathomable, you know. So Rav Sirotkin, now I just want to tell you on the side, by the way, my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, Zichrono Livracha, was opposed to reparations under a totally different argument. Had nothing to do with the ethics of having the Germans redeem and live with their consciences. He felt, based on something that he heard from his father, that Germany had the status of Amalek. And that's a very debatable issue in halacha, in halachic terms, but that was his position. And with regard to Amalek, we're not allowed to take anything from Amalek. The pasuk says there in Shmuel, it says there ad shor v'ad chamor ad sev v'ad salmo. You know, we can't even take the little sheep, the lambs from them. But truth be told, as a historical fact, and this much I know, I mean, I'm not a historian, I don't know how many highways would have been paved in the state of Israel without German reparations. I don't know how many buildings and hospitals would have been built without German reparations. You know, the state of Israel in the 40s, when they declared independence in 1947, 1948, was a very poor state. Anyway, Rav Sirotkin claims, getting back to the Mazdaim LaTorah, that you can look into the parsha from a contemporary perspective. He says the following. He says that in our time, also Hasha'ela shal Hashilumim migermania harura biad rechush Yisrael sheshadada vechriva biarza ubechol makom shedorach kaf raglam hatmea shel kaglexia rotzcheha shaharu yosem yishisha million meachenu breis Yisrael yoshve Europa. The kasha gavru aleim oivehem v'nitzchum also sheila hashilumim liam Yisrael biad rechusham vayechlak leiv ha'am l'shnayim. He writes this in very poetic Hebrew. The heart of the Jewish nation was split into two. Ktsasam omrim, those who claim ha'im rotzchenu yiagam yorshenu. Why should they inherit us? They're holding on to our possessions. Let them at least fork over our possessions, or at least some sort of commensurate values, kaviyochol. But ktsasam tarnim, there are those who are opposed. Ein li am Yisrael lovo b'shum masu matnim rishoyim elu. We should have no contact whatsoever, no give and take with these totally evil people. V'lami yomru b'goyim. Why should the goyim be able to say lokachnu kofer? We accepted a redemption for the nefashos, for the precious souls whose blood was spilled like water. Mizen nikach lahovenes rikshos avosenu. If we appreciate those who are opposed to German reparations, we can appreciate those who are very hesitant about taking the clay kesef and the clay zov, the yotzei Mitzrayim. Because there was no doubt amongst the yotzei Mitzrayim, many of them were fathers of children that they lost as a result of the gzera, the decree, and therefore lo rotzu lavo b'masu manim maneihem shochtei yoldeihem. They didn't want to have any connection, any interaction whatsoever with those who caused them such suffering, slaughtered their children, and now chishvu es kesef v'zov. Now they calculate values of silver and gold, shikablu and mitzrim, as if to say it would be dmei velados. This phrase dmei velados comes from the parasha Mishpatim. You know that if two men are fighting, the Torah has a story, and one, there's a pregnant woman on the side, and one of them, instead of hitting his friend, he hits a woman and she miscarries. So there's something called Dmei Vlados. So he's saying that the Dmei Vlados is like a payment, a compensation for killing a baby. He says, Kofer biad nefash sol lam, shezarkom liyaar, somos some bechomos. They use them as cement, right? It's hard to imagine this. In Pisom and Ramses, bimkom levenim, to replace the bricks. Vahaya biad zeh. And there were those who were saying, how could we accept that? Lo yikablu mem shum dovar. I don't want to accept anything from them. But others claimed that we deserve some sort of compensation for all the work of Chomer Levenim for 210 years. Vayera Vashem ra libot gole adam. You know, for those of you who learned Makkos, you know, the Gol Adam is the one who takes vengeance for the loss of a relative. Ki yicham levavam al nefesh al uleyem, v'nafsha moram aleyem al b'neyem shenishkatu l'tocham batyos shel paro. So what did Hashem do in this case? It's a fascinating ethical question, because there are arguments on both sides. Comes along Rav Sarotskin with a fascinating idea. Lo kof aleihem. What we find is mitzvos in the Torah. This is not a mitzvah. There's no compelling mandate that would force the Jewish people to take the clay kesef, clay zav. And how does he know this? How does Rav Sarotskin know that there was no absolute, unconditional mandate?
No.
No. The word no. Lo tziva al kol adas Yisrael lasos ke ela bikesh mehem daber na biozneam v'yishalom v'atam lazeh. Why was God interested, kaviyochel, in their complying with His will, but He couldn't force them because they had a very good ethical justified argument against afshe hey mochlim, even though they're willing to, you know, waive their rights to get any sort of compensation from the Egyptians. Moreover, they don't want to they find it repulsive to accept silver from the Mitzrim. But Hashem says, you know, Kidei Shelo Yomar Oso Tzadik V'Avadum V'Inu Osam Kiyem Bahem But V'Achkach Yetzu V'Chush Kodol Lo Kiyem Bahem Therefore Aleim Lo Kachas. In other words, it's not enough that Hashem gave a divine promise that they would take out the possessions from the Mitzrim. That alone could not override and mitigate the arguments and the feelings of those fathers who had lost their children who were opposed to taking these reparations in inverted commas. But Hashem said, you know what? I made a promise to Avraham Avinu. I would like to embellish this a little bit further. And again, this is Berzon, not Rav Sorotzkin. So, you know, if you want to... I think Rav Sorotzkin's approach is... It just gives us a whole new methodology. I love it. But I would like to embellish it by saying the following. The Jewish people were impoverished and enslaved for over two centuries. They need some sort of a financial basis to go on in life. You know, they're going into the Midbar. They're going to be establishing their own statehood, their own country in the land of Israel. So Hashem promises Avraham Avinu, don't worry, I'm not just going to take them out of Mitzrayim and leave them to, you know, on their own. You know, how are they going to go through the desert and survive? You could add even, how are they going to build the Mishkan? So Hashem promises Avraham Avinu that as part of the divine protection for the Jewish people, not only will He take them out of Mitzrayim at the end of the day, but He'll also give them a financial base. And I say this because I think the contemporary issue of Klei Kesef, Klei Zav, in the case of reparations for the Germans, is very similar. That on the one hand, we cannot negate the feelings of those who were opposed to accepting reparations. They have a very valid argument. But on the other hand, how are we going to build the state of Israel? We need that money desperately. So that's the Havtach of HaKadosh Baruch. Okay, well, let's put this on the side and come back to our original page. I'm just going to put this here in my so we'll have it. And again, Jeremy, if you have to go, you know, don't feel...
I've got 5 minutes.
So. All right, another 5 minutes. So what I'd like to, if... You know, I'm going to fast forward a little bit for the sake of Jeremy, because 5 minutes doesn't give me that much time, but I want to show you an insight of the Chasam Sofer which could somehow perhaps change our understanding of a prayer that we recite daily in Tfilas Arvis. This is what you call Birchas Kriyat Shema Shel Arvis, which you'll see in number 8, which you know by heart. But sometimes we don't pay attention to what we say. And Michael and I had a discussion about that this morning, that sometimes we daven when we take things for granted without... But if you take a look at the davening, you'll see that in one paragraph, two different things are going on here, and you can miss that. You can miss the, you know, the forest for the trees. First we start with Makeh Bevraso Kol Bechori Mitzrayim, which is Makas Bechoros. And in that context... The bracha of Kriyat Shema says, "Vayotzi es Am Yisrael mitov lecheres olam." So underline, emphasize that phrase, "Cheres olam." Now, "Cheres olam" is something unbelievable. It means we go from a state of slavery of avdus to a state of "Cheres olam," which means that we'll never ever be enslaved again. Okay, that's paragraph number one. Now we get to Roman numeral number two. Hamavir bonim begizri Yamsuf. Now we're at Yamsuf. Okay, this is a week later. This is on the last day of Pesach, right? And we see there, Rotfeim, Sonem, Besomos, Tiba, Ro, Bonagurosso, Malchuso, Kibla, Leah, Moshem, Nisol, Chanu, Shir, Besimchar, Abia, Mechulo. Now, it's interesting that in this context, Klal Yisrael reached this level of Shira, which is the most glorious level that Klal Yisrael as a nation ever reached, ever attained. Mi chamocha be'elam Hashem. Mi chamocha neder b'kodesh. They actually see and perceive godliness, divinity, the divine hand, right in front of their eyes. And malchuso rov anecha, etc., etc. But it doesn't say anything about cheres olam at this point. The cheres olam is connected to Yetzias Mitzrayim and Makas Bechoros. Says the Chasam Sofer, which you'll see in number 11, he says the following. Nira Li, this is on line 3 of number 11, he says that Bilel Makas Bechoros Lo Laku Bizchusam, the Makkah, the plague that destroyed the firstborn of Egypt, was not in any way connected with the schus of our ancestors, of the Jewish nation. It was rather a combination of number one, bischus avos, and number two, zdona shel Mitzrayim. It was because of the promise to our forefathers, our ancestors, and to the evil of Mitzrayim. V'al kein, and therefore, lo zochu Yisrael adayin lios banim lamakom. There is no level of banim. You see, let's go back to the bracha of Kriyat Shema number 8. After we get to Yam Suf, it says Hamavir Banav, and then it says Vero Banav. We don't have any level called Banav when we talk about Bechori Mitzrayim VeYotzias Amo Yisrael. It's Am Yisrael. That's a promise to the Avos that God will free us and liberate us, but we're not on the level of Banim. When do we reach the level of Banim? That's only at Kriyas Yam Suf. And he says the following: since we don't achieve the level of banim, because we really have no zchuyot, we have really no merits, therefore, what do we achieve at the moment of Yetzias Mitzrayim, after Makas Bechoros? Avodim, which means Avodayhem Asher Otzesi Osam Me'eretz Mitzrayim. Here he's referring to the Gemara in Kiddushin in number 9. The Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu declares that you, the Jewish nation, are my Avodim. You are my servants, but not servants to man. Li b'nei Yisrael Avodim, v'lo Avodim le'Avodim. That's called Cheres Olam. In other words, the Jewish people now achieve freedom. They are servants of Hashem, and they will never ever be subjugated as Avodim Liolam. That's the Cheres Olam that they achieve, but again, not on their own merits. Liolam lo yachzar adavar shel Yisrael avdei amokom chalila. That therefore it's Cheres Olam. So the great level achieved by Yetzias Mitzrayim in the aftermath of Makas Bechoros is Cheres Olam. Avodeihem v'lo avodim v'lo. We will never be avodim to another nation. But now we get to Yam Suf, and a whole new story emerges, and that is Emuna. Vayaminu v'Hashem uv'Moshe Avdo. Klal Yisrael reached a high level of Nevuah, right? Zekeli v'Yamveyu, Rasa, Ro Aliyam, Shivcha Aliyam, Mashalo Rasa, Yechezkel Membuzi. At this point, we deserve to achieve the level of Banim. So we go from the Cheres Olam to the level of Banim. But however, there's one advantage of Cheres Olam that doesn't exist with regard to Banim. Banim could never be Li'olam. Why? Because Banim is a result of Zchus. Which Zchus? Which merit? Emuna. That we reached Emuna at Yam Suf. Emuna means a total dedication and commitment to fulfill the will of God. Says the Chasam Sofer, that's not Cheres Olam, that's contingent. Kishe'enam osim ritzono shel makom, if they don't fulfill the will of God, nikroim avodim, they go back to becoming avodim v'lo banim. And that's a Gemara in Kiddushin Daf Lamed Vav. So therefore, when it was hakos of Evraso, Evraso means his anger, God's anger against the Bechori Mitzrayim as a punishment, then God promises, now your state of Avdus will terminate, and you will achieve the level of Cheres Olam. But that's not conditional on your behavior pattern, because you, the Jewish people, weren't Zoche. It wasn't because of your merits that you deserved this Cheres Olam. The Cheres Olam was because of the Avos and because of the Mitzrayim and so forth and so on. But when it's Hamavir Banav, now the emphasis is on the word Banav Ben Gizrei Yam Suf. Now it's Banim Atem LaShem Elokeichem. That's not Cheres Olam. That's something that we achieved the level of Banim as a result of the merit of our Emuna, but therefore it's conditional on maintaining that level of merit of Emuna. And that's what the pasuk says in Re'eh, you'll see on the bottom of your page, Banim Atem Lashem Elokei. I'd like to do with the time that's remaining, depending upon, you know, how long you can stay, and again, I don't mean to inhibit anyone, is to take a look at this first handout that I gave you, which is called Ehalta Biosnachal Neve Kodshecha. You should find it. If you don't find it, oh, here it is on this. Oh, you have it. Excellent. Okay. We're talking about a pasuk here. You know, the English translation would be helpful, but we don't have the English in front of us, so we'll try to do the best we can. The pasuk here in the Shira Sayyam, towards the end of the Shira, says, Nachisa Bechas. You know what? Let's open up at least the psukim, because I think we'll appreciate this more if we have the Chumash open in front of us. So in Perek Tes Vav, and we start on page 162. Oz Yashir Moshe Uvnei Yisrael Es Hashira Hazos Lashem. Now, it says, Ki ga'o ga'o susveroch bo rama vayom. We know that in Hebrew, in Lashon Kodesh, we have two grammatical forms. We have the past tense and the future tense. The Torah describes the Shir of Klal Yisrael, which is formulated in the past tense. Susveroch bo rama vayom. Because Klal Yisrael here in the Shir are describing events that already took place. We'll see it again in Pasuk Dalet on page 163. Makavos paravachelu yorav ayam. All in past tense. Fine. Now let's fast forward for a moment to Pasuk Yud Gimel, which is on the bottom of page 163. And there it says, Nachisa bechazdecham zuga alta, describing the compassion of God who has redeemed his people. Nehalta, which means that you will guide the people, be azcha, with your oaths, with your power, el nevei kodshecha. Now this is fascinating because the word nehalta is written in the grammatical past tense, beloshon avar. But yet, nevei kodshecha is a reference to what's going to happen at the time of the ultimate geula, the ultimate redemption, when God will bring us back to Nevei Kodshecha, which means to the Beis HaMikdash. Obviously, the Jewish people are singing a song here about what's going to happen in the future. And you'll see this over and over again. For example, if you fast forward to Pasuk Yud Ches, Hashem Yimloch Liolam Voet. That's also a relationship to the future and the ultimate geula. Tivi emo in Pasuk Yud Zayin, also describing in future tense that God will bring us to Machon Shiftecha, Mikdash Hashem Konu Yodecha. But the oddity here, which is noticed, of course, by Chazal, as we'll soon see, is that in Pasuk Yud Gimel, Nehalta, is in Lashon Avar. So on the one hand, we're very happy that there's a certain consistency here, that the Shira is being recited in Lashon Avar. But yet, oddly enough, this is inappropriate because we would have anticipated that Pasuk Yud Gimel should be recited in Lashon Asid. Tenayel bi'oznachal tvei kodshek. In the future, you will guide us back to the Beis HaMikdash. So this is the question that is raised here at the beginning of this essay, the first paragraph, by the Tolna Rebbe. And he quotes the Gemara in Baba Basra, which darshins a different pasuk that also has the word neve in a different form, right? Neve means a place to live. I guess in fancy English, maybe you'd call it a domicile. The Gemara darshins a pasuk in Chavakuk. What does the pasuk say in Chavakuk? It says, Gever Yahir, a person who's arrogant. Yehirus always means conceit or arrogance. v'lo yinave, which the root of that is nava, which is the same word that we have here in the Shira. So the Gemara Baba Basra says, Omar Rav Mori, Haiman Diyoyer, a person who exhibits this behavior pattern of Yehirus, Yehirus meaning of Gaiva, is Afilu Ainshe Beisei Lo Makabel. He's not even accepted by the members of his own household. Binava Shalom, right? It says in the Pasuk, Velo Yenava, he won't be at home in his domicile because the members of his family despise him because of his arrogance. So even when you display arrogance in the four walls of your house, that's going to have a negative result, and that's what the Pasuk in Chavakuk is teaching. The Gemara then quotes a statement in the name of Rav. The first statement was Rav Mori. Hamizgaya betalis shel Talmid Chacham, v'eino Talmid Chacham, a person who wears the garments of a Talmid Chacham. It seems that back in the day, and you'll see this even today among certain groups, the Talmid Chacham dress in a very specific way. I know, for example, I have a neighbor in my building. He's a dayan. He's a judge. Now, to become a dayan in this country, you know, requires not only endless years of preparation, but you have to be very lucky to be chosen as a dayan. But in any event, he wears a special garment. And whenever you see him, he's always wearing his regalia, you know what I mean? But here's a person who puts on that regalia, and he's not a Talmud Chacham. The whole thing is a fabrication, it's a bluff. Is ein machnisin oso b'mechitzoso shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Such a person will not enter into the close, intimate quarters of Hashem. And how do we know this? Because the Pasuk here in Chavakuk, describing this Gever Yahir, who's praving, he exhibits as if he's greater than he really is, because he wears the garments of the uniform of a Talmud Chacham, and he's not really a Talmud Chacham. The Pasuk says, V'lo Yinavev. What does V'lo Yinavev mean? Now, until now, we spoke in Rav Mori's famous reference, V'lo Yinavev means his bias, his own home. But now, V'lo Yinavev means Mechitzaso Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a little bit closer to our pasuk in the Shira, where the word Nava means the Beis HaMikdash, where the Mechitza of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. And that's why Rav, in order to prove his point, he makes a Gzeira Shava, because the pasuk in Chavakuk says V'lo Yinave, referring to this person who's wearing the talis of a Talmud Chacham, he's not a Talmud Chacham. And Ksiv Hasam, and there in the reference in the Shira to Mechitzasa Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Beis HaMikdash says Neve Kodshecha. So Neve and Nova are the same word, and the Talmud Chacham, the person who's not a Talmud Chacham, who tries to show himself and exhibit as if he is a Talmud Chacham, he will not live to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Tolna Rebbe asks a whole barrage of questions here. He says the following. In Rav Mori's frame of reference, the word Nova means Beiso Shel Adam, a person's personal home. And yet, in the context of Rav's statement, which is the second statement in the same Gemara in Bava Basra Tzadiches, the word Nova takes on a totally different meaning. We're not exactly sure. We don't know how to pinpoint it. It's Mechitzasa Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It might refer to Har Sinai, to Eretz Yisrael, maybe to the Beis HaMikdash. But in any event, we see that the word Nava, the way Rav understood it, is talking about a place where there's Hashra's Hashchina. And a person who is such a Balgaiva that he wears the garments of a Talmud Chacham, and he's not really truly a Talmud Chacham, he's not going to be allowed entry into the Beis HaMikdash. Mechitzos Shal HaKadosh Baruch. Now, the funny kind of question, you know, the of kind of analogy, the funny part of understanding Rav's statement is that Rav is talking about the Pasuk in Yechezkel, Gever Yahir. Yahir means someone who's conceited. And it's very strange that Rav uses that word Yahir as a reference to someone who's lying to us. He's fabricating and presenting himself as something that he's not. You know, his guilt is really sheker, you know, he's guilty of lying. He's misrepresenting himself. Like, there are certain legal systems where you can be prosecuted for misrepresentation. This guy is misrepresenting himself. He's wearing the talis of a Talmud Chacham, but he's anything but a Talmud Chacham. Why is that called Yahir? You know, maybe it would have been more appropriate for the pasuk to say Hamashaker, someone who presents himself as something that he's not, and therefore he's violating Sheker. Why does Rav call him a Yahir using that pasuk? And again, then we have the other question about Mechitzaso Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Apparently Rav assumes that a true, genuine Talmud Chacham is B'Mechitzaso Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And someone who's not a Talmud Chacham is not B'Mechitzaso Shal HaKadosh. He doesn't have that intimate relationship to the Shechina. So why does Rav have to say that he's a Yahir and he won't enter into the Nevei Kodshecha? Just simply say that if he's not a real Talmud Chacham, then of course he's not going to be in the Mechitza of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because only a real Talmud Chacham is in the Mechitza of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, Bekitzer, the bottom line is we're not clear about the relationship between the concept of Yehirus, which means conceit, and the concept of someone who presents misrepresenting himself as a Talmud Chacham when he's really not a Talmud Chacham. Add to this the Gemara in Sanhedrin of Zion that also darshins the parsha in Chavakuk, and it refers to ma'amidim. Now, what does this word ma'amidim refer to? So, if you take a look on page number 104, the ma'amidim are those which apparently happened back in the day who would buy the office of a dayan. In other words, they would pay enough money for like a bribe, and they would get set up and appointed as a dayan when they really didn't deserve that position. And that's based also on Chavakuk, because it says there, Chavakuk Vashem Behechol Kodsho Has Miponov Kol Haaretz. And that's a reference to these ma'amidim. Someone who's not hagun, he's not a suitable for being a dayan, to serve as a dayan, but he buys the position. So the Marsha there in Masechta Sanhedrin says about these ma'amidim that they cause Hashem to remain in his heichal kodesh, Hashem beheichal kodesh. What does that mean? Normally, Hashem is not limited kaviyochel to the heichal kodesh. Where is Hashem? Hashem goes wherever the dayanim are. And that's based on a pasuk in Tehillim. It says Hashem nitzav badas kel, which means that whenever the dayanim get together for judgment, that's where the Shekhinah is. But as a result of the fact that the position of dayanis is being bought by money, Hashem says, I'm going to stay put, remaining in my heichal kodesho. I'm not going to leave my heichal kodesho and join you in your adjudications, in your Adas Kel, when you sit in judgment. And the Gemara in the Yerushalmi at the end of Masechta Bikurim speaks about this very severe aver of purchasing the position of a dayan. And the Gemara says about Rav Moni that he was mezalzel b'dayanim ka'elu shisman al yedei kesef. He was very much, you know, in opposition to those who would buy and purchase that position. And Rav Amy in the Gemara in Yerushalmi quotes the pasuk, Elokei kesev, Elohei kesev, Elohei zav, lo tasu lahem. It's almost as if they created idols or they purchased gold and silver that were gods. Amar Rav Yoshua v'taliso sha'olov, and when these people who purchase those positions, when they don't deserve it, they wear the talis, they wear the garment, the special garment of a dayan, is kimerdas shel chamor. He compares it to the saddle of a donkey. The saddle of a donkey has two purposes, two functions. Number one, it makes it more comfortable for the rider to ride the animal. And number two, it helps the animal himself. The Gemara says about the chamor, that the chamor needs the warmth, feels the warmth of the saddle over its body. Now, all this is a mashal for the case of a Talmud Chacham. The Talmud Chacham, on the one hand, wears certain garments as an external expression of his inner Torah achievement. And therefore, a Talmud Chacham, even when he removes those special garments, since those garments are nothing more than an outward expression of his inner level of Torah, therefore, even without his garments, he still has the Torah. If, on the other hand, he's not a Talmud Chacham, he doesn't deserve to be appointed as a Dayan, then any authority that he has, it's only because he shows off the uniform that he wears. It's all external. There's nothing internal. There's nothing real or, shall we say, essential about he's parading himself around as a Talmud Chacham. Therefore, the very moment that he takes off his garment, he is completely excluded from being a Talmud Chacham. A Talmud Chacham, even when he takes off his fancy uniform, his garment, you know, his rekel, what we call in Yiddish, he still is a Talmud Chacham. But in this case, the person is only a Talmud Chacham as long as he's wearing his garments. So the mashal is to someone who puts on a saddle on a chamor, and when this saddle is removed, the chamor is left exposed without the saddle. And as we said before, the Gemara assumes that the animal itself needs the saddle. So just like the animal needs the saddle on it, so too the false fabricated Talmud Chacham who pretends to be a Talmud Chacham, he needs the garment. And the Rebbe goes on to describe how the outer garments that a person wear should really generate an obligation, a moral obligation on the person who wears those garments. When a person puts on the garments of the Rabbanon, of the rabbis, that generates an obligation of him to operate, to behave in a very serious way, the COVID rush, with a certain seriousness. There are many Talmidei Chacham who refuse to wear those garments. You know, they have an inner sense of anava, of humility, and they don't want to, you know, expose themselves to others having to see them and like worship them because they wear the garments of a Talmud Chacham. But those, in any event, who take advantage of the opportunity to wear these garments, they have to be very careful about the way they behave, because those garments represent the Torah, and now you have to live up to those standards. Now, on page 105, he goes back to the Marsha, and he says the following, that a Talmud Chacham, the status of a Talmud Chacham is not a function, is not a result of anything that's external, no matter what clothes or uniforms he wears. It's all internal. And the Talmud Chacham and the way he behaves is a reflection of what he is, wherever he is, in any place in the universe, and whatever garments he's wearing. Why? Because the Shekhinah is always with him. He represents the Shekhinah. He's wearing the Keser Torah, the crown of Torah. Now comes along this person who wants to pretend and present himself as a Talmud Chacham, and he wants to, in a sense, usurp those garments. He doesn't really have the true status of a Talmud Chacham. He doesn't have the internal essence of a Talmud Chacham. Everything is now external. And that's why the Marsha says that as soon as he takes off the garments, he's no longer in the status of a Talmud Chacham. All this is going to impact on our understanding of Yetzias Mitzrayim. I'll try to finish this up as fast as I can, because I see we're running out of time. HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. The Arizal says we had reached the lowest level of the 49th Shari Tuma. And now we need desperately Ashras HaShechina. We need that HaKadosh Baruch Hu have this intimate relationship with us, which is something that's going to happen on a more permanent basis when we build the Mishkan and later on the Beis HaMikdash. There are many different levels of that intimacy with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's Eretz Yisrael has a Shekhinah, there's Yerushalayim has a more intense Shekhinah, there's Beis HaMikdash has the most intense Shekhinah. And now the question is, how does a person behave? You might say, well, okay, if I'm in the Beis HaMikdash, I have to behave on a very on a very high level. But if I'm far away from the Beis HaMikdash, I don't have to behave on that level. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says no. Kedoshim Tiyu. Enter into the Kedusha. Enter in and touch and have an encounter, a close, intimate relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Beis HaMikdash. And then, even when you leave the Beis HaMikdash, you will still maintain that tremendous level, that high level. The ultimate goal is not to remain in the four corners of the Beis HaMikdash, but to take the Kedusha with you outside of the Beis HaMikdash. That's Kedoshim to you. That's like the Talmud Chacham, who may wear the garments, but even when he takes off these garments, he still retains that special status of Nevei Kadshecha. The Shekhinah comes with him. That's our goal, to take the Shekhinah of Nevei Kadshecha and bring it to wherever we are. If a person now usurps the garments of a Talmud Chacham, then Hashem Beheichal Kodesh, that God will remain Kaviyachol within the Dalet Amos of the Beis HaMikdash. When does HaKadosh Baruch Hu decide that I'm going to be Mashu my Shekhinah in the Heichal Kodesh, but now you can take the Shekhinah with you, and the Shekhinah is willing to go wherever you are, and it's not limited to the Beis HaMikdash? When does Kedusha have the possibility of expanding beyond the four walls, the confinement of the Beis HaMikdash? That's only when the Jewish people have a genuine encounter with Shekhinah, then they can now take the Shekhinah and bring it wherever they are. And therefore he says, Dayan Hagun, someone who's worthy of being appointed into the position of a judge, he's a Dayan even when he's outside the court. He will behave in a way that reflects the very essence of his being, even if he's not wearing the special uniform of the Dayan, even if he's found, you know, experiencing things that have nothing to do with being a Dayan. But on the other hand, in contrast, the Dayan who buys the position, he doesn't deserve to wear the uniform of a Dayan. And therefore, whatever status he has, it's only in an external way. As long as he's wearing those garments, his betokef begadav, then you can call him a dayan, so to speak. But it's all dependent upon the externalities of wearing these begadim. And therefore, we can come back to our original pasuk: Nachisa bechazdecha amzugalta, nehalta biyaznecha el nevei kodshecha. What does this mean? What's Nachisa Bechazdecha Amzugalta? Nachisa Kitzon Amcha V'yad Moshe V'Aaron. Moshe V'Aaron are guiding the people like true shepherds. They love the people. Even when they sleep at night, they're worried about the future of the people. Like a true shepherd who's always worried, he's concerned about the sheep that he's in charge of. And therefore, from this perspective, the Roet Son is like a Dayan, Hagun, who deserves to be a Dayan, who takes his position because it's internal and it's essential wherever he is, 24/7. Nehalta biyaznecha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu guides the Jewish people wherever they are. Wherever they are on the face of the earth, they find the Vei Kodshecha. So that we're not really referring to the future. The Pasuk is not referring to the time in which we will establish the Mishkan and later on the Beis HaMikdash. Even if there is no Beis HaMikdash, this is what we saw at Yetzias Mitzrayim at Yam Suf. Nehalta biyaznecha al nevei kodshecha. Hashem was there, the Shekhinah was there. It's Peloshon Avar, in the past tense. The implication of this pasuk is not that God will be with us in the future, but that God was with us now, in the past. And God will always guide us in a way that we can touch into Kedusha. And by doing so, by having that encounter, we can take the Shekhinah wherever we are. Nevei Kodshecha is not limited to one particular place and one particular time. The opposite of Nevei Kodshecha is the person who takes upon himself the garments of a Talmud Chacham. He tries to falsify the truth and pretend and present himself as a Talmud Chacham. He's doing the opposite of what Hashem calls Nevei Kodshecha. He is forcing HaKadosh Baruch Hu to remain, so to speak, Kaviyochel, locked up in the Makom Kedusha. He is taking the power of a Talmud Chacham and abusing it. He is trying to protect, pretend lo hofia ketamid chacham. He doesn't have, in truth, the mile of a tamid chacham, and therefore he's completely excluded from the vei kodshecha. And the pasuk in Chavakuk says v'lo yinaveh. Whereas in the opposite case, the case of a true tamid chacham who's connected to the shechina, he's genuine. There, it's nachisa bechazdechal nevei kodshecha. Hashem will allow us to take the Nevei Kodshcha, that Kedusha, and bring it beyond the confines of the Beis HaMikdash, wherever we are. The Rebbe ends up with a tefillah, and he says, Yei Ratzon, that Hashem should allow us and give us the ability to take this, these kochos that we have, the midos of a Talmud Chacham, to be Dovek B'Shechina. And we should see that just like in the past it was Nevei, it was Nehalta B'Yazduchal, Nevei Kodshecha, so too we'll see it again in our time with the building of the Beis HaMikdash, Hashlishi, B'mheir, B'yameinu.